At the end of last lesson in Ruth chapter 2, Ruth has returned to Naomi's home, the home where she's living also. And Ruth is brought back a gift of barley. And Naomi has said to Ruth, "Ruth, where did you glean today to come back with all of this barley?" Because Boaz had noticed her. And not only that, Boaz had allowed her to go right through the middle of the grain fields to pick up grain instead of just trying to gather what was left behind over on the edges of the field, like all the rest of the poor people were doing. Naomi is astonished that Boaz has noticed Ruth. Boaz is an older man. In fact, he is much, much older. And he has noticed Ruth. And not only that, he's been kind to her. And Naomi is really and truly astonished at that. And she says to Ruth that he is a close relative. And Naomi is very desirous to make sure that Ruth is cared for and the future is cared for. And so Naomi decides to make a plan, a very special plan, as any mother-in-law would make, because her daughter has been noticed by a man who can be the redeemer of the family. And so Naomi says to Ruth, we pick up here in chapter 3, verse 1, then that Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you? And now is not Boaz, our kinsman, with those maids you were? Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight." How in the world does Ruth know that Boaz is going to stay outside of town, at least a mile outside of town? There's a circle around every single town between the first edge of town and the first mile that was always reserved for the priest, the Levites, to use that ground for free. They could not own that ground, but they were able to use that ground to grow crops if they needed. So Boaz's land had to be at least 1 mile out of town. And Naomi says to Ruth, Boaz is going to be winnowing the grain tonight. How does she know? Well, here's how she knows. The winnowing process went like this. They would take the sheaves, basically they cut the stalks and the grains are hanging on the ends of the stalks. You've seen that as you've driven down through the fields. They would go to a flat place, they'd call it the threshing floor, and they would begin to beat that grain on the floor. And as they beat it, the grain would fall off and the stalks would be left. After most of the grain was off the stalk, they would take the stalks and they would go over it and use it to build a fire. They would burn it and such. The grain laying on the floor was not purely clean yet because it had lots of what we call chaff, or the inedible part of the stalk that has fallen with it. They would then take a stick that had a fan on it, not a broom, but a fan. They would take that fan, scoop it underneath, throw the grain up into the air, and if the wind was blowing at just about the right speed, it would blow the chaff away and the heavy grain would fall to the ground. The perfect wind for doing this, of which it was the wind that they always used, was the wind that came off of the west, from the west, over the Mediterranean Sea. It would be a steady wind. It would not be too strong. It would not be too weak. It would always be just right. The north wind was always way too strong. The east wind would come in spurts, which when they threw it up, it would waste their time because the grain would fall in between the spurts and the gusts of wind that would come. The south wind was just as bad, and the south wind rarely came because of the distance it would have to pass. Usually the wind was coming from the west, the north, or the east in that area, and still today. But when the west wind came over that sea, it would be just a steady breeze, just a light, steady breeze. So as they threw the grain into the air, that light chaff or trash would blow off to the side and the grain would fall down. And after they had cleaned most of the grain, they'd pile it into a heap and they'd bring some more over and they'd do it again. That's the winnowing at the threshing floor. Evidently, the wind was blowing from the west that day, because Naomi knew and told Ruth that he is going to be there tonight. He will not be going back home tonight. They will do it after 6 p.m. because the wind blows, it's cool, it's nice, and it's easy to do after 6 p.m. So Boaz will be there tonight, Naomi tells Ruth. Then look what she says to her. Ruth, I kind of like to add, I've got a plan, and here's my plan. Wash yourself, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your best clothes, and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. And it shall be, when he lies down, that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go and uncover his feet and lie down. Then he will tell you what you shall do. And she said to her, Naomi, all that you say, I will do. Naomi knows that Boaz is a close enough relative to be the redeemer for their family. They have no male in their family that can go down and do business transactions and sell the grain or whatever they might have. That cannot be done by a woman. It has to be done by a man. They need someone to redeem the family. Ruth and Naomi evidently still have the land in their possession that belonged to Naomi's father and the two dead boys, of which Ruth was married to one of them. That land cannot be sold by a woman at the gate. It has to be sold by a man. And the man is called the Redeemer. The man who will redeem the land and buy it and pay for it, only to hold it so that whenever a son is born in that family, that son can be raised on that land as if it is his, because it really is, but it is kept by the Redeemer until that son is of age, and then it is given to that son to carry on the inheritance so that tribal member will not lose that portion of land that belongs to him. It's called the kinsman redeemer. And Boaz is a relative, and Naomi knows it. And she says, wash yourself. Anoint yourself with perfume, some of that olive oil that has spices in it. Put that on so you smell nice. Put on your best clothes. Don't put on your rags. Don't put on the clothes that you're going to go down to glean from. No. When that gleaning is done, go wash yourself. Go anoint yourself with oil. Put on the very best you have to go and meet your Redeemer. Look at what I wrote in the paragraph there right after that, where it says, picking up with the second line, she does not want Ruth to present herself to her Redeemer in her everyday clothing or without washing and putting on perfume. We should stand before our Redeemer in such a manner. We should wear our best clothing to meet the true Redeemer, whatever our best is. Worshiping our Redeemer is a special occasion worthy of wearing our best. Folks, most of the churches today have lost that vision. Most of our churches, across the board. Our people come to meet their Redeemer and to worship their Redeemer in a place where their Redeemer is, and they can feel like closest to Him in rags. Oh, they may have bought them that way, and they may have paid $175 for that pair of jeans that has no knees in them and are rags and tags. And yes, they may come with their shirts hanging out and holes in it and cruddy looking. And yet, whenever they get dressed for a funeral or for a wedding or for a dance that they may be going to, they dress much better than they do to come to worship. There's something wrong with that, folks. There's something wrong with that. We should prepare ourselves to go meet our Redeemer with the best we have. Now, if the best you have is a pair of blue jeans that don't have any oil on them, because that's the only pair that don't have any oil on them, put those on. Choose your best when you come to worship the Lord and to meet your Redeemer. It is a pet peeve of mine. And I have been preaching this for months and years. Yes, sir, Mr. Steele.
Jim, my grandfather, the doctor who raised me, was a Scot. And his theory, and he was a preacher, and his theory was, you're going to meet the king.
Yeah, let me repeat that. But he still says his grandfather, who's a Scot, said that whenever you're going to worship, you're going to meet the king. So dressed worthy to go meet the king. And folks, I want you to do something when you dress worthy. Dress worthy and dress in your best enough that you feel comfortable in it. That means do it weekly. You've seen it. You've gone to funerals where the first time that young man who's a pallbearer for the first time has had a suit on is that day, and he can't get used to it. And he's more worried about what he looks like than what he's there to do. And you've seen it also with the little kids who wear their best and they can't get used to it. And so they're always doing this with their... And folks, even the adults do this as they do, because you can tell they're not used to it. You know who the new people are on the block. Just tell them, go ahead and keep wearing your best. You'll get used to it so that you can focus on the Redeemer. It's very important. Naomi here warns Ruth to be careful not to distract Boaz in any way as he's doing his work. But when he gets through with his work, notice where he goes to lay down. He is not going to go home. He is going to stay there with the work because they're going to work from 6 o'clock probably till about midnight. Or until all the grain that they have collected in the past few days, because they've been waiting on that west wind to come in until they have taken care of that. Because there really was no other way to do it. Folks, they could not plug in their electric fan as we do today. There was no such thing as electric fans. And they could use other fans to cause a breeze. But when God is doing it for you, it always works so much better. When God brings the breeze. So Ruth goes and she says, I'm going to do it. Now listen, there are some commentaries that have said that what Naomi is asking Ruth to do is to enter into an intimate relationship with Boaz. They have not studied well. Take those commentaries, tear them up and throw them in the trash. That is not the tradition. The tradition of uncovering the feet was the tradition of going to a kinsman redeemer, a man who is a relative who has the ability to redeem you and to uncover the lower part of his legs for the purpose of saying, I have a request to make of you. There is nothing wrong with this. He was not at this. Naomi is not asking Ruth to go and to have an intimate relationship. She's asking her to go do and what is proper so Boaz will notice her and ask her what her request is. Now, we don't know that there's a request going on right now. We will catch that as we go through. Tradition tells us that there was a request. I'm telling you, tradition tells us that Ruth is going to go to Boaz with a written request from Naomi. And we'll catch that as we finish the lesson. So she went down, verse 6. So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that the mother-in-law had commanded her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain, and she came secretly and uncovered his feet and lay down. Was Boaz drunk? No, he wasn't drunk. Mm-mm. The work was done. His belly was full, his thirst was quenched, and he saw the heap of grain that had been gathered. He was pleased. He was happy with the day's work, and he laid down. And as he laid down, and in his tiredness, he slept off to sleep, drifted off. Ruth did as she was told. She goes and she lays back the edge of the cover to uncover his feet and lays down at the end of his feet. What happens? Then he said, Boaz. Oh, I'm sorry. Then it happened. Verse 8. And it happened in the middle of the night that the man was startled. Can't you imagine? He probably went to turn over. And then his foot hit Ruth probably. And went and said this. And he bent forward. And behold, a woman was lying at his feet. And he said, who are you? And she answered, I am Ruth, your maid. So spread your covering over your maid so that for you are a close relative. That was the telltale sign. If he was to take his blanket and throw it back over her, he was saying to her, I am your kinsman, I am your close relative, I will grant you your request. I am willing to do what you ask. I am going to take care of you, is what he would be saying by doing that, because that's the tradition. Then he said, may you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first. How has she shown her last kindness to be better than the first? There it is. By not going after young men, whether poor or rich. See, Boaz is an old man. He is not a young man. In fact, he has to be old. He has to be at least 78, 79, or 80 years old. There is... Oh, sorry. That is not old. Thank you. No, that is true. Since that's just around the corner for me too. But to take a young wife who is probably 27, 28, or 29, I am not sure that is what everyone would call appropriate at this point in time. It seems, as we have watched TV and have seen that those things happen, where an old man has taken a very, very young wife, we have all had our opinions about that, of which we will not go through at this point in time. She says it's her kindness. She has come to Boaz. Her first kindness was how she treated Naomi, her mother-in-law, to be there. Her second kindness is this, that she comes to Boaz. Verse 11, and now, my daughter, do not fear. Here's a little clue. I will do for you whatever you ask. You see, there it is. She has a request in her hand. She has gone through the proper traditional thing. She has gone up. She has uncovered his feet. Whether he would be awake or asleep, had she gone up to him to ask a request as a kinsman redeemer, as he was awake, sitting in a chair, she would have gone and taken his garment and laid it back over his feet to say, I have a request. He says, I will do for you whatever you ask. For all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence. She's a Moabite. She's not even supposed to be in the assembly of the people in any of the town. She is supposed to be forbidden to come in as a Moabite. And yet, she has won the hearts of everyone because of how she treated her mother-in-law. Remember the Deuteronomy passage that I read you last week? Down to the 10th generation, after the writing of the law of the Deuteronomic code, Moabites and Ammonites were not to be in the assembly of the people because of their sinful nature. Well, we're right at the tail end of that. We're at the tail end of the 10th generation at this point in time. That curse on those Moabites and Ammonites is fixing to pass away. But up to this time, all the Jews still knew those Deuteronomic codes that they were trying to follow. In fact, that probably is one reason that the closest relative will not redeem her. We'll get to that in a minute. Verse 12. And now it is true, I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I. That actually is probably one of my favorite verses in this entire book. Because it says to me that Boaz is a man like I want to be, even in my old age or in my young age, a man of integrity. He has a beautiful young woman who is laying at his feet. He could throw the cover over her and take her and redeem her, but he says, I cannot do so because I am not the one first in line to be your redeemer. I am not the one first in line to have the responsibility to take the land and purchase it and use it as my own, caring for it until I pass it on as an inheritance to the one who it truly belongs to. Boaz was not going to take advantage of Ruth and Naomi, because there was one closer. He didn't have to go to the gate. He didn't have to go do it. He could have done it himself. But no, he knew there was someone closer. He says, I can't do it. His integrity would not let him do it. Verse 13, he says this to Naomi. Look here. Remain this night, and when morning comes, if he will redeem you. Who is he? The closer relative from the verse before. If he will redeem you, good. Let him redeem you. But if he does not wish to redeem you, then I will redeem you. See the promise? Evidently, the note has asked. Naomi has asked Ruth to ask Boaz to redeem them. And Boaz has said, I can't because I'm not the right one. But I know who the right one is. And if he doesn't redeem you, I promise you, I will redeem you. So she lay at his feet until morning and rose before one could recognize another. That means she rose in the dark. And he said, he didn't say this to Ruth. Look who he's saying this to. Let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. Catch it. He's saying it to the maids and to the servants. He is not the only one who was there that night. No one went home. The master was still in the field. The master was still working. The master laid down there to sleep, and that meant that the maids and the servants laid down to sleep there too. The heap of grain was there. They were going to get up the next morning. They were going to reap some more because the master was there. Had they gone back to the house, everybody was there that worked for him. All the maids, all the servants. They all saw Ruth there. They knew Ruth was there. And so Boaz says, let it not be known that Ruth was here. Why? Because Boaz has a plan. He has an important plan. And he doesn't want to, as I would say proverbially, cast pearls before swine. He's telling his maids and his servants, don't you tell anyone. And I'm going to go ahead with the story. He says, I'm going to the gate today and I'm going to get this handled today. And I don't want you to say anything to anybody until this transaction is over. Folks, listen. Tribes are tribes and nations are nations and people are people. It doesn't matter where they are. And everybody that worked for Boaz knew that Ruth was at his feet that night because they were all out there around the campfire. And Boaz gave his employees instructions. He had a plan. And he did not want his plan to be thwarted. And because people are people, things like this just cannot be kept quiet. There are important things in life that you must keep quiet. And there are important things that you must do. And you must do it today. There are things that matter not a hill of beans in this life at all. But there are things that have to be done today. Some of you have list upon list upon list of things that make absolutely no matter in this world whatsoever. You scratch out things on your list and you rewrite lists over and over and over. And the stuff really doesn't matter. But with every single person that I've ever seen that does that, there's always something on that list they keep pushing to another day. And that was the thing that was important that needed to be done. Nothing else mattered. You let all the chaff get in the way, the trash of things you think are important. So it is in my house. You know, out in my garage, I got projects that are not finished yet, have been sitting there for years and years and years. I got cars that are in parts and have not been finished. And you know what? If they never get finished, it is okay because it is not important in life that those cars get finished. If they end up being hauled off to the metal yard, so be it. But you let something happen with my wife and my daughter and my family or whoever, and if I don't take care of it today, I have sinned. There are things that are important today. And all that stuff out in my garage, I've told you many, many times, everything that is near and dear to me besides my wife and my daughter is out in the garage because that's where we have placed it. Isn't that terrible? And my house is beautiful and spick and span and you can eat off the floors because everything that's near and dear to my wife is in the house. And nothing that is near and dear to my wife is in the garage. Isn't that right? It's absolutely right. And you know what? My garage has stuff in it that literally and truly, ever so often, I just back up the truck and start throwing stuff in because I realize it's not important and I'm not going to use it and I'm not going to fix it. I put it in that truck. I come down and I say to the helping hands guys, will y'all go throw this in the dumpster? And you know how much of that stuff gets put in the dumpster? None. They take it to their garages. You're welcome. And I wish they'd go ahead and just sell it and get rid of it because it's just not important. Well, Ruth spends that night with at Boaz's feet. And she gets up before dark, before the light comes up, so she can slip back into Bethlehem. She can get back to Naomi's house. And look what happens, verse 15. And again, he said to Ruth, she's not left yet. That's where she's headed, to Bethlehem. Give me your cloak that is on you and hold it. And she held it, and he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her. He had to help her put it on her shoulders so she could carry it. Let me explain what this means. See, y'all would just read past that. That's what I'm here for. You pay me for this. A dry measure of anything in the Bible is 2.175 bushels. He put 6 times 2.175 bushels of barley in her cloak, tied it up, and helped her get it up to where she could haul it into town. That's almost 13 bushels of grain. That's the reason why he said he had to lay it on her. She didn't carry it in her hands. She had to put it on her back.